Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
M-S-W Media.
Hi, I'm Harry Littman, host of Talking Feds, a roundtable that brings together prominent figures from government law and journalism for a dynamic discussion of the most important topics of the day. Each Monday, I'm joined by a slate of Feds favorites and new voices to break down the headlines and give the insider's view of what's going on in Washington and beyond, plus sidebars explaining important legal concepts read by your favorite celebrities. Find Talking Feds wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to BetterHelp for supporting Cleanup on Aisle 45. For 10% off your first month, go to BetterHelp.com/cleanup. Start living a better life today with BetterHelp.
The rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans, one rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's cleanup on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be cleanup on aisle 45.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 52 of Cleanup on Aisle 45. It's Wednesday, January 12th, 2022. I'm your co-host, Allison Gill, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Andrew Torres.
Allison, always a pleasure. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm over the COVID. I've tested negative now. I'm just going to do another test tomorrow to double check.
Excellent.
But I am fully recovered.
I am glad to hear that. We had an exposure scare here, but... whole family has tested negative, although, you know, you go through that like every time, seasonal allergies, or you sniffle, or you're like, I worked 18 hours yesterday and I feel really tired today. Maybe that's COVID, you know, but yeah, so lots of positive things. I'm gonna break a negative thing to you, Allison.
What is it?
We had zero new patrons last week. So, you know, you've been thinking about the show. Now's an excellent time to, you know, break us out of our funk. And by the way, we will shower you with praise. And if you are a patron, A, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. B, you know, why not shame a friend or family member into supporting us?
That's what this is about. Shame
that
in January.
That is what this is about. It is about getting people to give us money for a free product. So, you know, we gotta use every tactic available at our disposal.
Seriously, though, we do love our patrons. You literally Indeed. Make the show possible. And therefore, this Friday, 2 days from Woo-hoo! Now, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, we are going to host an Ask Us Anything Zoom hangout for patrons of Cleanup on Aisle 45. So if you'd like to get a shout out on the show, get the ad-free feed, plus all of our bonus stuff like this Zoom that we're going to have this Friday, head over to patreon.com/aisle45pod, that's A-I-S-L-E, 45 P-O-D, and sign up for as little as a buck an episode. And now, on with the show. Andrew, we have such a great show today.
I am so excited.
Yeah, I can't even express what a good show this is, what an incredible interview we're going to have in the second half of the show with Congressman Krishnamoorthy. And we've got some comings and goings. So we're going to pack all of our comings and goings and cleanup stuff here into the A block, what we call the first segment, so that we can get everything ready to talk to the congressman in the second half of the show, because it's going to be just an incredible interview, I think.
Let's do it.
All right. So let's kick this off with a new rule. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services released a proposed rule on January 5th that includes provisions that would prohibit discrimination against LGBTQ plus people in healthcare and required healthcare plans to cover gender affirming care. So yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, yet another way on the thousands long list in which it makes a difference having an administration that shares your values. So the rule is called the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, HHS Notice of Benefit and Payment Parameters for 2023, which you know that means a lawyer wrote that.
it's not really full of pizzazz.
The text notes that it's a result of President Biden's executive order January 21, 2021. So, you know, second day in office against discrimination. That order required HHS to review all existing regulations and guidelines in consideration of that executive order. And as a result of our review of certain regulations, we propose to amend HHS regulations such that exchanges, right, healthcare exchanges, issuers, agents, brokers are prohibited from discriminating based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
Yeah, and the rule would affect health plans sold through the Affordable Care Act, healthcare exchanges, and restore some of the protections rolled back by the Trump administration. It would clarify, how many times have we said restoring shit rolled back by the Trump administration? It would clarify what insurers must do to avoid discriminating. So it's not just don't discriminate. It's here's what you must do to avoid discriminating on the basis of sex under those plans, and would enforce Biden administration policies following on the 2020 Supreme Court ruling Bostock v. Clayton County, which we've talked about many times.
Yeah, and those were the consolidated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 cases that, rather surprisingly, and again, this was a pre-Amy Coney Barrett court, right? The question, I think a lot of Supreme Court observers, where is Chief Justice Roberts going to fall? And not only did Chief Justice Roberts rule on the side that that said that gender identity and sexual orientation were covered by the Civil Rights Act of 1964, by Title VII's prohibition on discrimination in employment on the basis of sex. That drew a vote from Neil Gorsuch as well, who wrote the majority opinion. This tracked what we've been following in opening arguments for a long time. The original Seventh Circuit opinion, I flagged for you what we called the Flaum and Ripple concurrence, which basically said, look, by definition, by Boolean logic, right? Mm-hmm. If I treat you differently because you sleep with a man, then I would treat me for sleeping with a man. That is discrimination, quote, on the basis of sex. There is no conceivable way to separate sexual orientation from sex, despite the fact that it is also equally clear as a matter of history that the people who wrote the Civil Rights Act of 1964 were not considering sexual orientation. The question was, did the principle they enshrined into law, should that properly extend to gender identity and sexual orientation? The Supreme Court, maybe the last good decision we will ever see coming out of this Supreme Court, Bostock versus Clayton County, 6-3 ruling said, yes, it does. So with all that as background, the focus of the new HHS rule is narrower than that of the Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act. That flatly prohibits discrimination in healthcare, and was, of course, gutted by the Trump administration in 2020 pre-Bostock. So multiple lawsuits challenging both the Trump era administration's changes and the Obama era regulations itself are, of course, still pending because lawyers are the worst.
Because lawyers are the worst.
That's true.
That's like flawless logic to me. If I sleep with a woman and you sleep with a woman and you treat me differently, that's sex.
There you go.
Discrimination. Just not because of who I'm having sex with, but because of my gender.
Right. And again, this was the hardest thing I've ever had to say on opening arguments. It's no easier here 2 years later, but I mean, give Neil Gorsuch credit, right? Yeah. Like he said it is a question. His flavor of originalism is what starts with, what does the plain language of those words mean? And I was proud that we predicted that a similar concurrence from the Seventh Circuit in the Hively case, which was consolidated into this, provided that swing vote. I will also add, if you ever want to feel good about humanity, and you know, this show doesn't give you a lot of reasons a lot of the time, go read that opinion, the Gorsuch opinion in Bostock. And it is, in addition to reaching the right result for the right reasons, it was clearly vetted by folks with connections to the transgender community, right? Like it I have read pro LGBTQ plus decisions written by allies that nevertheless use cringe inducing vocabulary, right? I'm not going to repeat that and cause pain to our listeners, but like, you know, it's hard to get right. And this gets it right on every level. So,
unlike the flu causes hundreds of thousands of deaths every year.
Yeah.
let's switch gears. Let's talk about comings and goings. I have a going for us today. Mr. Michael Carvajal, director of the U.S. Bureau of Prisons, whose tenure at the agency was marred by scandals, sexual abuse, pandemic-induced struggles, is resigning after nearly 2 years position.
Yeah, Carvajal began his career in 1992 as a correctional officer at a prison in, guess the state?
Texas.
Yeah. Rose to the agency's top post in February of 2020 after he was appointed by the Trump administration's Attorney General Bill Barr. And of course, his tenure was marked by what the press generously describes as scrutiny over a myriad number of issues within the agency, including its handling of the coronavirus pandemic, which was worse than the Trump administration's in general. That's a low bar to limbo under. With Carvajal presiding over the BOP for effectively the entirety of the pandemic so far, about one in three BOP inmates have tested positive for the virus. That's according to their own numbers, and that is a rate nearly double the U.S. population.
Well, bye-bye.
Yeah.
And in some good news, Suffolk County, Massachusetts DA Rachel Rollins officially submitted her resignation today to the Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker as she prepares to take over as Biden's U.S. attorney for Massachusetts. Yep. Rollins was nominated way back in July of last year. Way back in July of last year. And then, Andrew, your good friend Ted Cruz labeled her a pro-criminal activist and paving the way for her nomination to be deadlocked 8-8 in the Judiciary Committee and ultimately 50-50 on the Senate floor.
Yeah, and I cannot emphasize how ridiculous that was. So look, here's the real story. Rollins, like everyone who's followed the evidence at every level, regardless of party affiliation, understands that the fix broken windows model of crime pioneered in the 1990s is A, super duper racist, and B, clogs up the criminal justice system with a ton of low-level offenders, right? So, and again, I cannot emphasize strongly enough how bipartisan this is among prosecutors, boots on the ground, who deal with these issues. Rollins announced very sensibly as district attorney that she would focus on serious offenses and move petty crimes like shoplifting, trespassing, and resisting arrest without any underlying crime in addition, right? To non-criminal mental health and drug treatment courts.
Yay! And the crowd goes wild. That's what everybody wants. Prosecutors want that. Judges want that. I mean,
hardcore right-wing prosecutors want that.
The cops want that. Want.
Just Yeah, exactly.
And the result of that program was a violent crime rates dropped in Boston from 2020 to 2021, breaking with the national trend. That includes homicide, controls for both progressive and conservative jurisdictions within Suffolk County. But that didn't stop your buddy, Ted Cruz, from the word when you say stuff that's not true, but you don't care? Oh, yeah. Lying about Rollins' record, saying, and again, this is 100% false, that crime rates skyrocketed under her watch. And how can he say that? I mean, I guess, besides the good old speech or debate clause.
Yeah. Well, and look, I'm glad we're going to highlight this, because this is what Ted Cruz does, right? He is typically super careful when he lies. So, for example, his press release opposing Rollins says that Americans are, quote, becoming very familiar with the kind of lawlessness and dangerous crime that radical left-wing district attorneys like Rollins have generated under her watch. So I don't know. Apparently she's responsible for DAs like herself, whatever that means. I know, but I got to get to this bit of amazing subterfuge. See if you can spot the sleight of hand here. Last year, the murder rate went up nearly 30% overall, and it went up 40% in cities with populations between 100,000 and 250,000. So, notice that Cruz never says murder went up in Boston, because, you know, it didn't. And notice, by the way, that Boston has 700,000 inhabitants, right? So I do not know what the murder rate going up in cities like Hialeah, Florida, and Huntsville, Alabama has to do with Rachel Rollins.
Well, they aren't similar situated. They aren't DAs like her.
Ted Cruz knows that he is lying with the numbers. That's why he's carefully constructed this, right? You know, he's hoping that if he reads enough numbers, right, his constituents will just sort of like fall asleep and be like, numbers, and draw the inference that he wants, which is to convince the people who follow Ted Cruz to believe that Rollins is soft on crime and made Boston more scary, even though she isn't and she didn't.
Yeah, and remember, Cruz's lies got every single Republican in the Senate to oppose her. That includes Susan Collins, who I'm sure was very concerned. It included Lisa Murkowski. It includes Mitt Weathervane Romney. So, you know, like, let's stop pretending these are middle-of-the-road senators. They aren't. They're enablers of the Cruises and Hollies, who are occasionally, but infrequently, slightly embarrassed by how horrible they are. Yeah. And there's another aspect of the Rollins story, right, beyond her demonization. It's the six-month journey she underwent from nomination to confirmation, which is part of the larger picture we've talked about on this show. A year after Biden's inauguration, only 41% of his nominees for Senate-confirmed posts have been approved. That's according to a new analysis by the Partnership for Public Service, a nonpartisan group that seeks to make the federal government more effective. God, I would hate to work there.
it's a tough job. Someone's going
to
do it, right?
What are you doing slogging into work today? You just play Morrissey all day on the office radio.
That's an outstanding reference. I just get The Cure on nonstop, a continuous loop. Look, we've said this repeatedly on the show, and we get it. We are looking into the headwinds of liberals being disappointed. President Biden has issued nominations at a faster pace than Trump, slower than Obama and Bush, and part of that has to do with knowing that, you know, the pipeline is full, right? It has taken an average of 103 days for the Senate to confirm Biden's nominees, right? So on average, 3.5 months. That's an average of a month longer than the Obama administration, which was beset from the outset by Mitch McConnell saying, we're going to make Obama a one-term president. We're going to stop. If he's for it, we're against it. Things are worse now than at the height of Obama, of the Republicans obstructing Obama. Twice as long as Republicans, as Newt Gingrich obstructing the Clinton administration, and three times as long as during the Reagan administration.
Yeah, and listen to this. Listen to this petulant stonewalling. Last month, Chuck Schumer, Democrat, yep, majority leader, agreed to schedule a potentially contentious vote on imposing sanctions on the company behind the Russian-laid natural gas pipeline to Germany, Nord Stream 2, to satisfy Ted Cruz, who had blocked scores, yep, of State Department nominees over that issue. And as soon as he did that, 40 nominations cleared the Senate, including Mr. Biden's picks to be the U.S. ambassadors to China and Japan. But scores of others, as we know, remain stuck in limbo.
Yeah. And if you're thinking, is there a linear? Of course, there's not a linear relationship between those two. So how about this one? Last month, good old Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, briefly refused to confirm five U.S. attorney nominees from Democratic leading states, demanding on the Senate floor that Dick Durbin, right, the senior senator of Illinois, first apologize for interrupting him more than 8 months ago during a hearing. That got what he wanted, I guess. I'm thinking, can we play the like Hermes Conrad from Futurama bit of going like, why don't you apologize using your nice cheap words? But look, Dick Durbin apologized at the barrel of a gun, and then the Senate voted to confirm all five nominees.
But women are too emotional.
Yeah. You gotta say you're sorry.
That's not an apology. That would be funny. That's not a real apology. That'd be great if Dick Durbin was like, I'm sorry you feel that way.
then they would convene a subcommittee on the effectiveness of apologies. And
I'm sorry you thought I interrupted you.
Yeah. Your face smells.
Sorry, you poopy head. This month, the White House resubmitted more than 100 nominations after the Senate adjourned for the December recess without taking action. Some of those nominees have been waiting nearly a year to start working.
And as we know, there's still a couple of U.S. Postal Service board members awaiting confirmation. And after the break, we're going to be joined by Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy to discuss that, as well as congressional oversight. You do not want to miss this interview.
It's Stay so good. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's AG, and this segment of the show is brought to you by BetterHelp, bringing you professional online counseling whenever and wherever you need it most. Family and friends can be a great source of advice, but sometimes they don't exactly get it right. They'll tell you to smile more or just be happy or snap out of it. But you can get BetterHelp from BetterHelp, who will identify your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist. Plus, it's online, so it's incredibly convenient and easy to use. No sitting in traffic or crowded waiting rooms. Your counselor can be contacted at any time from anywhere, and you'll receive timely, thoughtful responses. It's safe, it's comfortable, it's secure, and it's hassle-free. Finding the right professional to talk to is crucial, and that's why BetterHelp makes it free and easy to switch your counselors if you need to. Plus, they are way more affordable than offline counseling, and they even offer financial aid. BetterHelp is not a crisis line or self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. And BetterHelp's licensed professionals specialize in all kinds of stuff like depression, anxiety, family conflicts, trauma, grief. These are specialists that might not be available in your local area, but they're available to you on BetterHelp. So start living a happier life today and get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/cleanup. And you can join the over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/cleanup for 10% off your first month. Thanks, BetterHelp. Everybody, welcome back. Honored to be joined today by Congressional Rep representing Illinois' 8th Congressional District, also serves on the House Intelligence and House Oversight Committee. We're happy today to be joined by Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy. Congressman, hello.
Hey, Allison. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
Thank you for having me.
Really excited to be able to talk to you today. And Andrew, I think the number one question, this is not the number one question on everyone's mind, but it's been a question for a very long time.
Yeah, I think this may lead our emails, right, in terms of Democratic frustration at what sort of unfolded in front of us. Our listeners are pretty sophisticated, right? They understand that Postmaster General Louis DeJoy was appointed amidst massive conflicts of interest and came up with a plan to, reduce post office resources during a pandemic and in particular during the largest expansion of of vote by mail in our nation's history. And it sort of looks like that happened and then nothing happened. Our listeners know he can't be removed directly. So I guess I have two questions for you. The first is, what can be done about Postmaster General DeJoy, and how do we do it?
Well, thanks, Andrew. I get asked that question a lot, as you can probably imagine. And actually, going to what Allison said, this issue of the post office is perhaps among the top two or three issues that we get complaints about. You have people complaining about medications not arriving on time, bill payments not arriving or being sent as they had before, packages not arriving. And so this is disrupting everyone's lives, as you know. And what we also know is that, Mr. DeJoy, when he came in the summer of 2020, at the same time that Donald Trump was decrying vote by mail, instituted a slowdown.
Yep.
He did not make any apologies for it whatsoever. I think on-time performance went from the high 90s down into the low 80s within weeks, if not months, of his taking over. And that's when people like myself and and the Oversight Committee jumped in immediately and said, this is completely unacceptable. Fortunately, I think because of that pressure from us on the Oversight Committee, the USPS ended up delivering a lot of the ballots properly. But we have to watch them like a hawk, because right when we thought that things were getting better, then he instituted further slowdowns, he increased prices, and he called that reform. And in any other business, that would be called a failed business practice. So now what I did is I asked for the board to remove him, and I didn't hear from them, so I wrote a letter to the president saying it's time to remove the chairman of the board. And interestingly, I got a response around November 19th when the president decided to remove the chairman of the board. So that's a good first step. There are several more steps that have to happen. But now, just for your listeners' edification, the president has now replaced three of the nine governors. He's nominated two more, and they have to be confirmed. But I think we're on the road to getting the votes to get rid of DeJoy.
That's great. That's I think that's a sort of, we were really interested in where we were with replacing some of the Trumpian or cooperative board members who may have been looking the other way. And I always find it stunning that for some reason, of all of the things that the government services we have, that the post office is somehow the one that's supposed to turn a profit. Nobody ever says, hey, Pentagon, why are you in the red this year? These are services and protected outline services in the Constitution. So it's always been a mystery to me as to why people, Republicans who are bent on privatization, by the way, just want that particular service to turn a profit. I don't understand it.
You know, on top of your criticism, not only does the Postal Service get expected to turn a profit, but it also has to incur liabilities that no other private or public sector company that I'm aware of has to incur. So the biggest is under the law, the post office has to fund, I believe, 70 years worth of healthcare retirement benefits in advance. And so what that essentially does is it puts an albatross of tens of billions of dollars around the neck of the Postal Service. And then the Republicans say, see, they're not making a profit. See, they're even more in the red. And it's just crazy. So we have to undertake significant postal reform, take that albatross off their neck, and then allow them to initiate other steps toward modernization. But in the meantime, we can't make things worse by slowing down services and increasing prices, because guess what? It encourages people not to use the postal service. Right. In my own office, you know, we have tens of thousands of pieces of correspondence that we have to get out the door every year. I forgot the number. It's a huge, maybe in the hundreds of thousands. And right now, what we have to do, folks, to make sure that vital pieces of correspondence make it to their destination is we send it by USPS, and then we also email it as well, because we don't want someone's passport or some other vital document or piece of information to get lost. And that's what a lot of people are going to do. And that's going to only take business away from the Postal Service.
Mm. Yeah, that's been our practice as well. I have an ongoing law practice. My office is literally walking distance down the street from the courthouse. And during the worst of this, in October and November of last year, of 2020, there were court notices that took months to arrive at my office, right? I mean, that, you know, again, you could have stapled to the back of a turtle and pointed it in our direction.
Yeah.
And I would have made it there in time.
I'm a veteran. I rely on getting my medications in the mail. And as you were talking about some of these undue burdens and albatross, it just dawned on me, what if the Department of Veterans Affairs were expected to set aside 70 years of compensation and retiree pay and health care pay we have a hard enough time doing it for 2 years at a time with VA budgets. And so it's just absurd. So I'm really glad that you're working on this with both the president and the Board of Governors.
Well, absolutely, and my understanding is that because that's a legislative requirement, right? It's obviously going to be a challenge to remove that pre-funding. But it sounds like one of the things that we can do is bring some honesty to the post office debate in pointing out that their numbers showing the USPS in the red are, you know, essentially cooked books. Is that right?
That's right. I think that. My understanding is that if you remove that pre-funding mandate for several years in the past, they would be in the black, essentially. Now, there have been other changes, as you know, that they have to contend with, namely the increase in parcels and packages due to Amazon and the like, and also the reduction in first-class mail as people go to other, email and other digital forms of transmitting correspondence. But, you know, putting a pre-funding mandate around their neck really hampers their ability to respond to the marketplace. One thing I was just going to say, based on going back to something Allison mentioned before, remember the Postal Service from the founding of the country has been meant to bind the country. Regardless of where you are in the country, you should always be able to depend on the Postal Service to both send and receive mail. Well, it just turns out that America is a big place. And it's in some places it's sparsely populated, and others it's dense. But what we want to do is make sure that nobody's discriminated against. And that's what the Postal Service has done as a service, not as a for-profit means of making money. So that's really important to point out. We don't want a stamp to be a different cost, you know, for instance, whether you're in Chicago or whether you're in, you know, rural Nebraska. And that's just something that Americans have come to rely on and expect.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I would add to that last mile coverage to rural Nebraska, to remote areas is, as far as I know, right, private delivery companies, you rely on the post office for that last mile, right?
That's right. FedEx, Amazon, all of these, UPS, all of these entities actually pay the Postal Service for the most part to do those deliveries for the last mile to these rural or remote areas.
Yeah. All right. So I want to ask a pessimist, or at least a worrisome question, right? Which is, I understand from your discussion on the progress that you've made with the president in terms of replacing the board members, that essentially the timeline you're looking at is once those board members are confirmed, we'll have the votes to vote for a new Postmaster General. What are you worried about the current Postmaster General sort of doing to sabotage things while, you know, the slow moving effort to oust him is underway? And how do we protect against that? Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Well, what I'm really worried about, Andrew, is, you know, we have another election coming up, as you know, in 22. And so we're going to have to watch him like a hawk, as well as his lieutenants, to make sure that they don't institute further slowdowns during this election year at the same time that so many millions of people are going to be voting by mail again. We need to make sure that they don't increase prices more this year or do other things that would create disruptions. What I'm most, if I had to be just flat out honest with you, we can't afford to lose more customers for the USPS. You know, a lot of people have choices, as you can tell. They don't necessarily have to use USPS. They could go to other forms of parcel mailing and so forth. And if this guy continues messing things up, you know, people are going to exercise their options and they're not going to come back. And it's just going to put the USPS in a further worse position.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I'm glad you've emphasized that.
Yeah, a lot of there'll be more cleanup than there would have otherwise been. If we could shift gears a little bit, I'd like to talk about some of your oversight, other oversight roles in Congress. And I think there's a general sense among those of us on the left of frustration in terms of holding prior regimes responsible for their criminal activity. Merrick Garland's January 5th speech urged patience and, of course, didn't really comment on any ongoing investigations, although he went a little further than I thought he would when he said, "We're going to go after everyone at any level." I didn't think he was going to be that specific. Are you satisfied with the current state of the Department of Justice's investigation into Trump, his family, his lieutenants, his allies, as it's happening either alongside or waiting for the January 6th committee?
Honestly, I'm a little bit dissatisfied. I'm a little impatient. You know, I lived through January 6th, as did my colleagues, and I'll never forget the ear-splitting pounding on my office door as Capitol Police evacuated me from my office when they discovered a bomb 200 feet from my office window. And, you know, we still live with the aftermath of that today. And, you know, 2,000 people breached the Capitol violently. 700 people have been arrested, 70 have been sentenced, and looks like 30 to 40 are going to jail right now. And to me, I think we got to pick up the tempo and we got to hustle and make sure that we get those other 1,300 people who haven't been arrested yet or charged. And then we have to fully prosecute the rest, because if we don't, then basically we're sending the message to these people that you got away with it and you can feel free to do it again. And we can't afford for that to happen. Now, does the DOJ need additional resources? Does it need more manpower? Perhaps. I mean, this is a huge, sprawling investigation. There's no doubt about it. But then ask us in Congress for it now, because we don't know what's going to happen in 2022. We don't want the Republicans to take one branch of Congress and then impede or strangle or maybe even end the investigation later on. So we got to hustle right now.
Yeah, I think that call for urgency is well placed. Let me ask the question sort of directly about going up the chain, right? And again, I think this is doing some reading between the lines of the Attorney General's speech on January 5th. He promised to, you know, sort of look to the sources. I think during the second impeachment, a significant amount of effort was expended on demonstrating the funding and the coordination coming out of the White House, utilizing organizations like the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, that sort of thing. What do you know, or you know, what sort of can we look for in terms of kind of looking past, looking up the chain from the 2,000 folks who breached the Capitol to the folks who coordinated, were in charge of logistics, sent water bottles, handled, you know, telephone, you know, cell phone coordination, that sort of thing?
I think we absolutely have to go wherever the investigation leads. My concern is precisely about those people who were not at the Capitol, who clearly there was forethought here. There was intelligent planning with regard to what happened. We don't even have the bomb makers in custody. You know, the bombs that were planted at the RNC by my office, and then the bomb at the DNC, we still don't know who planted them or who made the bombs. And this is deeply disconcerting. All that being said, I do believe the Attorney General when he says that he's going to be going after all these other people. And perhaps within their investigation, they have leads that they are following, especially as they've been prosecuting from the ground up. My only request is we got to hustle. It's got to be a 24/7 operation at this point. And if we don't undertake that kind of operation, I guarantee you, I saw this play out before. The Republicans absolutely will condition their oversight, their appropriations, anything that they can get their hands on, should they come to power in any branch of Congress, and just try to throw a monkey wrench into this whole thing, because they wanted this to go away yesterday. They don't want anything to do with this. They know it's a big loser for them, the way that they've handled it. And so, you know, we have to act accordingly now.
Yeah. And that's exactly what you said is one of my main concerns. When Merrick Garland had pointed out, hey, we have 20,000 hours of videotape, 15 terabytes of information to go through. Only 5,000 subpoenas seems low in this kind of sprawling investigation. But he didn't come out and say, and here are the resources we are putting on this, and here I'm pulling people from all these offices to do this, and we are maybe trying to seek other venues because, you know, the courts are backed up already because of COVID, and now you're jamming 1,000 people into that system that was already straining and struggling, and we I don't think we have enough judges on the federal bench as it is right now. And so that's what I was kind of hoping for that we didn't really get, is what the resources are. Have they asked for any money and additional resources, and to kind of at least convey? I know they know it's important, but to convey to the American people the sense of urgency, that's the kind of urgency we saw after 9/11. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. And here's my other concern, Allison, which is when you don't let's just take the 700 people who are already been arrested and charged. 150 of them have been sentenced or entered into plea deals, but the rest are kind of awaiting prosecution or in different stages. And they're already being called by the other side as political prisoners and people detained without cause. I mean, this is what happens when you're not just hustling these people through the system. Everybody deserves due process. There's no doubt about it. We're not against that. But at the same time, we have to view this with a kind of a greater sense of urgency, in my opinion, than perhaps any other prosecution that we've seen in recent memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, that dovetails with what we've seen on the other side, which is what I would call sort of efforts to gaslight America about what happened on 1/6, reframe the narrative. I mean, all the way to, you know, these were disaffected tourists.
Right. Jim Jordan's letter is just full of it.
Yeah. And I, how much does that sort of the larger narrative work concern you, and what can we do about that?
I think it does concern me, and you know, it galls me when I hear Paul Gosar or somebody else in one of our hearings call them tourists and peaceful, law-abiding citizens. I don't know too many law-abiding citizens who break the windows of the Capitol. They're criminals to me, and or assault police officers or law enforcement officials or worse. I think the only way that we can change the narrative, in my opinion, is we've got to rush the information out there as quickly as possible about what we are finding and what these people, what we're finding about what they've done. I think shedding maximum sunlight and bringing transparency helps to change the narrative quickly. It's like the other day when Liz Cheney started reading those text messages from Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and all those right-wing conservative talking heads, I think that caught people's attention. And it's really hard to, at that point, say this is just fake news when she's reading word for word what they said. That puts them on the defensive immediately. And that type of information is what we need to get out there now. And it needs to be fast at the same time that we're, you know, balancing the need to conduct an investigation with, you know, bringing accountability in the court of public opinion, because we do need to change hearts and minds as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I have one final question for you about your role in oversight, Intel, COVID subcommittee. I know that for a long time during investigations into the Trump-Russia situation, when Bill Barr was the attorney general, there were, I think, referrals made to the Department of Justice for folks like Kushner, Don Jr., Eric Prince, and their testimony to Congress. That Congress has expired. And I was wondering if there are any outstanding active criminal referrals from Intel oversight, the COVID subcommittee, to the Department of Justice that you can tell us about, if you're able to tell us about those.
I believe that there were from the last Congress. I don't think that they necessarily are just dead because Trump can kill them. But it's up to the Biden administration to kind of look at them and decide for itself what it's going to do with them, and then for us to bring it back to their attention. With regard to the Russia investigation and so forth, there is some talk with regard to certain key officials whose testimony was just flat out false, what to do about them and how to hold them accountable. At the same time that we're kind of balancing January 6th and the whole investigation there. So we're just trying to obviously walk and chew gum at the same time.
Definitely.
Well, Congressman, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. I don't know if there's anything that on which you'd like to end. We just want to express our appreciation for giving us a little bit of the view from the inside.
Well, I just want to thank you and Allison, Andrew, for everything that you do. And thank you to all your listeners for paying close attention to what's happening here in Washington. I still believe that transparency, accountability are incredibly important, and we should not give up on those issues, regardless of any other agenda items that we pursue, because I find that only through transparency and accountability can we possibly prevent this behavior from occurring again, and holding those to account who committed wrongdoing in the past. You can't just sweep it under the rug. You have to deal with it. That's the American system.
Yeah. No one is above the law. Equal justice under the law.
Hear, hear.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Illinois' 8th Congressional Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy. I really appreciate your time today, Congressman, and thank you.
Thank you so much.
Man, what a smart, awesome dude. I absolutely love him. He's one of my favorite members of Congress.
Yeah, me too. That was fantastic. I love that we got candid answers. I love that you got in the question at the end. We're breaking some news here.
I can't believe he told me about that. I was like, because you even heard me tee up the question. I'm like, you don't have to tell me. But
right.
I wanted to know because, you know, from back from the Mueller she wrote days, we know yep. Lewandowski lied his face off. Eric Prince lied his face off. Kushner lied his face off. Junior lied his face off. And they made criminal referrals. That 117th Congress, I think, yep. House Intel made those criminal referrals to the Department of Justice under Barr, of course. And so, I imagine nothing.
Yeah. So they went nowhere. Well, right?
Yeah. Went to the circular file. But. You know, I was wondering, you re-up him, what's happening? And for him to actually say, we're having chats about that.
Yep.
They flat out falsehoods to Congress. I was like, whoa, thanks. Nice.
And so much of this is applying pressure in the right places to the folks who will listen, right? And that resulted in President Biden taking action with respect to the Postal Board. It's things can take a while to unfold, but
was saying we can't, we have to hold these people accountable. We have to. And that's why I was like, how about these people?
Yep. I know.
Right in there.
That was a fantastic and a great moment. And, we continue to share. I mean, you heard, Representative Krishnamurthy share all of our perspective at, wishing that we had more information and that these things were moving more quickly. But it is good to know that we have an ally in Congress who is watching these folks and has a long memory and is pushing for the kinds of accountability that we demand and that underlie the show. So
yeah, and since the show came out last week, we had the remarks from the Attorney General, which yep. Went beyond what I thought. In fact, I kind of yep. want to change our intro to include that little
we
more
should. Yeah.
bit of a detail about because before it was just I'll follow the facts to hold everyone accountable. Now it's at any level, whether you were there at the Capitol or not that day.
And I'm glad you set me up for this. I mean, we broke down those remarks on opening arguments. To me, that was the key clause, right? Whether you were there or not, right? There is only one reason to say that.
And he didn't say we will hold you accountable for criminally accountable for the attack on the Capitol. He said for the attack on democracy.
Yep. Yep.
And that widened the scope a little bit because I was concerned he started with the attack on the Capitol. I was like, back up a little bit.
Yeah. let's talk about John Eastman. Let's talk about establishing a war room. Let's talk about teeing up, supposed ambiguities in the Electoral Count Act and using that as a basis to lie to the American public and say we do not have a slate of electors. We live in terrifying times, and I'm glad that there are some folks who get that.
Yeah, and I mean, we got so used to 4 years of horrible, awful ad-libbing and that words didn't mean anything, just to get up and say, voter fraud, 1,700 ballots in Texas, Bill Barr, or, Trump, whatever comes out of his mouth. It's just shooting from the hip. I think getting back to a place where you have to understand that every single individual word that is written and spoken by this attorney general is deliberate and has meaning and is thought about. And where he's looking at a sentence saying, do you think that infers that I am not including this group of people? And they have a conference about words and how much they matter. And this isn't just getting up there and, talking about how we should inject bleach or whatever the fuck, it's deliberate and it's important. And so people say, you're just, when you read into in between the lines, you're just a blind faith Garland defender. And I'm like, what makes you think that this particular word right here, first of all, doesn't say what it's clearly sounds like to everyone else, but that you shouldn't read between the lines, because that's how lawyers and judges and prosecutors write shit.
Yep. And look, again, speaking to that, we have set milestones. We have drawn lines in the sand. If you want to know what, if there's a, I've mentioned this on the show because it, I find it embarrassing, right? Like, these are folks who with whom I share 95% of political goals. There's an embarrassing meme going around that I have mentioned that, you know, sort of has photographs of Merrick Garland moderating Federalist Society, ACA, American Constitution Association, debate events, right? And then says, you know, well, you put a member of the Federalist Society in charge of the Department of Justice. And again, you know, what I said to that when I first saw that was, if that makes Merrick Garland a member of the Federalist Society, it makes me a member of the Federalist Society. I have participated in a Federalist Society debate against now D.C. Circuit Judge Justin Walker. There is nothing, right? That does not imply endorsement.
I have photographs of
of course,
of Judge Sotomayor, Justice Breyer, Justice Kagan, and their panel moderation and debate, whatever, for the Federalist Society. They all have profiles on there. Look up any fucking buddy on the Federalist Society website.
Right.
The only one I couldn't find was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who did pop up, but only because they were wishing her a happy birthday.
but if you're not persuaded by that, right? If you are, if you say, well, you know, it still seems kind of fishy. Again, the counterfactual is right there, and we said it in November and December. If you were truly a secret undercover centrist trying to just make all of this go away, then you don't issue the criminal referrals for those who defied the 1-6 subpoenas. And we said that was a line in the sand, and that if Merrick Garland did not issue criminal indictments for those folks, we would call for him to. And guess what he did, right? Because he's not a secret Federalist cabal trying to undermine democracy from inside.
And I was the same about the Mo Brooks certification request.
There you go.
That was a red line in the sand for me.
Yep.
I was like, dude, if the Justice Department says they're going to represent Trump in his lawsuits, but Trump hasn't asked for certification, or Mo Brooks in the lawsuits from 1-6, yep, I'm out.
Yep.
But he didn't. And then every single test that we've put him up to, and to me, I thought the big test here was he has to say he's going after the leaders.
Yep.
And the other test was he needs to come out and tell us something. I got a wild hair up my ass and said, you know what would be rad? If Trump is going to give a speech on a press conference on the 6th, Merrick Garland should give one on the 5th. Actually, I think I said the D.C. U.S. attorney.
You should
give one on the 5th, and come out and just give us an update on the thing. And everyone's like, yeah, he should. Fucking, where's that Federalist? And then he comes and they're still like, I hate what he said, you know. Or he gets up and he says he's going after the leaders. Yeah, but he didn't name them. You know, it's like nothing will ever be good enough. And I think that's just sort of where we're at. And you know what? The way that justice ends up, we've got a race now. We've got a three-way race. Okay, Manhattan District Attorney, Fulton County DA, who came out today and said by the middle of this year, probably, definitely into 2022, she'll make a charging decision. And the feds. Who's going to indict first, right? Who's going to indict first? My money is on the Manhattan pony, but
I'm still riding Fulton County. That's my horse.
She's going faster than I thought.
That's what brung me. So I'm not changing midstream. So.
Nice. but I mean, there's so many investigations going on. The January 6th committee is doing an amazing job, and anybody that just whole cloth shits all over all of it is either a disinformation bot or a despair troll. And Adam Schiff, who has wondered what's happening at the DOJ, came out and said in his book Midnight in Washington, we don't have the luxury of despair. Don't be that privileged a-hole. You know.
I had more, but that's how I would love to end this episode. Right. I endorse that 100%.
But I love you all. And yeah. There are real and reasonable concerns, and I've voiced them as well. And we will continue to voice them. You don't have to be on one side or the other. Everything is nuanced. You can hold two thoughts in your head. I know it. I have a hard time some days. But anyway, this has been wonderful. And thanks again to Congressman Krishnamoorthy for the amazing interview and for giving us some of his time today. I really appreciate that. Andrew, do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I just want to echo that and thank you all.
All right, we'll see you next week on Clean Up on Aisle 45. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill and Andrew Torres, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com.
Season 4 of How We Win is here.
For the past 4 years, we've been making history in critical elections all over the country. And last year, we made history again by expanding our majority in the Senate, beating election-denying Republicans in crucial state House races, and fighting back a non-existent red wave.
But the MAGA Republicans who plotted and pardoned the attempted overthrow of our government now control the House, thanks to gerrymandered maps and repressive anti-voter laws. And the chaotic spectacle we've already seen shows us just how far they will go to seize power, dismantle our government, and take away our freedoms.
So the official podcast of The Persistence is back with season 4. There's so much more important work ahead of us to fight for equity, justice, and our very democracy itself. We'll take you behind the lines and inside the rooms where it happens, with strategy and inspiration from progressive changemakers all over the country.
And we'll dig deep into the weekly news that matters most and what you can do about it, with messaging and communications expert, co-founder of Way to Win, and our new co-host, Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
So join Steve and I every Wednesday for your weekly dose of inspiration, action, and hope.
I'm Steve Pearson.
And I'm Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
And this is How We Win.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of 1. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.